Scene 7, Sara Vaskovic, 2:20 p.m. It was getting on toward 2:30 when I got down to Sarah's office. Her first words were, "I know about it. It was Michael Strong." I said, "Yes. Do you mind if I sit down?" It was just a form of words. I sat down and stretched my feet out in front of me. "You've had lunch, I suppose." "No," she said. "I had to do something to get my mind off you and whatever it was you were doing with Tony. So I just pushed through the campaign and made the final decisions. It's finished."
"I'm glad, if it got your mind off my crisis."
"It didn't, but I had..."
"Faith in me?"
"No, I was too scared for faith. I had hope in you."
"I came through, so the hope was justified." "I haven't had lunch either. As long as you finished the project you were engaged in, how about calling it a day and coming out with me?"
"I was wishing we could do so."
"Well, wishing will make it so." She retired for a moment, and I made use of the men's room down the hall. I could not have used the one in 1511. And then we walked out of the hotel into the light and air. What rain there had been that morning was over, and the sun shone occasionally through the clouds. I put her into a taxi to get away from the scene more effectively than a walk would have made possible, and we went to a Scandinavian restaurant well uptown. Since it was well past lunchtime, the restaurant was virtually empty, and that was well. There was a small smorgasbord still available, and we helped ourselves to it lavishly. Except for the filling of our coffee cups on two different occasions, we weren't disturbed even by a waiter. Sara said,
"You discovered who it was this morning, didn't you? When you said something about a pen not being where it was supposed to be."
I said, "I discovered it last night, I guess, when I was woozy and half asleep and the other half knocked out. When you told me what I had said, it came back."
"Could you explain it to me?"
"I'd love to. So far, I've told it to Marsogliani and the police, but just as little as possible, and I would love to explain it exactly. It's all a matter of pens, you see, from beginning to end. There were the pens I forgot to bring up to Giles' room, the pens Strong was using to transport the heroin, the pens that went dry. If I were writing it up, I'd call it the case of the three pens, but Asimov will probably do the writing. I've got to get the facts to him, and he's committed to calling it Murder at the ABA.
She said, "Imagine carrying heroin in pens."
"Why not? Everyone carries pens. No one pays attention to that, and people are always borrowing pens. Anyone could approach Strong, borrow a pen, use it briefly, and return a different pen. And in a hotel, nothing is noticed. Who cares how many others elsewhere are doing the same thing?"
"Why three pens, by the way? You said the case of the three pens."
I said, "That's in reference to the three pens Giles used in the autographing session. He had one pen with him to begin with, an old one. Call it Pen One. He should have had more, and he did, in the package I never delivered. And because I didn't deliver them, he went to the autographing session with Pen One and nothing else. It was an ordinary blue-black pen, and it was monogrammed with his name. Pen One ran out of ink, but according to Teresa Valier, who was sitting next to him, he exchanged it for another pen with the person whose book he happened to be autographing at the time. Giles got a pen with ink, and the person in front of him got a souvenir with the author's name on it. So now Giles had Pen Two, and he no longer had Pen One. Pen Two also had blue-black ink, but it was not monogrammed. Then Pen 2 ran out of ink, and Nellie Griswold brought him Pen 3, which was red ink. When Giles accepted Pen 3, he put Pen 2 in his pocket. He routinely hung onto his pens even when they were dry. So now he had both Pen 2 and Pen 3. When he was finished autographing, he was so nearly out of his mind that he threw Pen 3 away petulantly. When he went up to his room with you, therefore, he had only Pen 2 in his possession. Is that clear?"
Sara nodded. "Yes, but what follows from that?"
2 hours later," I said, "when I was in Giles' room with Giles dead in the bathroom, there was a pen in the room. It was monogrammed, and it was out of ink. It had to be Pen One. There was no sign of Pen Two. I didn't actually look for it at the time, not knowing it should have been there, but the police listing of his possessions included one pen inscribed with name. No other pen. The only way in which that could be is if between the time you left and I arrived, someone had come with Pen One, given it to Giles, and taken Pen Two in exchange. but the person who had pen 1 was the person who had exchanged pens with Giles at the autographing session. Why should he now want to give a valued memento in return for a pen he had already cheerfully given away, and which was also out of ink? I'd have had no way of answering that, really, if it weren't for the little heap of powder on the bureau, which I was sure was heroin. Given that, I asked myself if the person who had exchanged pens had not inadvertently given the wrong pen to Giles. He had meant to give Giles a real functioning pen, and in the excitement of a chance to get the monogrammed pen, he had handed one over in which the ink reservoir had been clipped close so that it couldn't write for more than a few minutes, and in which the internal space had been filled with heroin. He must have followed you two up to the room and waited for you to leave in an agony of impatience and uncertainty. After all, if through his carelessness anything happened to destroy the transport system, he could scarcely expect much of a life expectancy. If he got away from the police, he certainly wouldn't get away from his superiors in the racket. He came to the door so soon after you left, cutting it so fine in his anxiety that you caught a vague glimpse of him. If he had been able to effect the change, and why should Giles refuse, all might have been well for him. The trouble is that Giles had this habit of fiddling with pens and unscrewing them, especially when abstracted or distraught. He must have fiddled with pen, too, after you left, and the powder it contained had tumbled out onto the bureau. This couldn't have meant anything to Giles, but when the person made his entry and was ready to exchange pens, the sight of the spilled heroin must have driven him wild. He attacked poor Giles, who was completely unaware of what was going on, and, I suppose, killed him with a blow on the base of the skull. Then, thinking as quickly as he could, he got the clothes off Giles and tried to make it look like a fall in the bathtub. Of course, the murderer couldn't know that to strew the clothes about would be a dead giveaway to a few people, and that I was one of those few. It was a piece of incredibly bad luck for him. He took away pen 2, but he should also have taken away pen 1 and the spilled heroin. He didn't, but I'm amazed he did as much as he did. He must have been in one screaming hurry to get away, and forcing the clothes off a dead body, and that dead body a heavy one, across the room and into the bathroom must have taken time. And that's it. Sarah said, "No, it isn't. How did you know it was Michael Strong?" I didn't, not at first. When the heroin I had first noticed was gone, I was convinced that Marsigliani had removed it to protect the hotel, and I didn't connect that with the murder at all. This morning, though, when I worked out the matter of the three pens and decided that the murder was part and parcel of the drug situation, I had to think it out again. The one who got rid of the heroin had to be the murderer, and that had to be Strong. It was Strong who was an admirer of DeVore's and who had stood in line for the autograph. Rather cleverly, he found an opportunity to tell me this. I imagine he felt that if it had come out independently, then the mere fact that he failed to mention it might look suspicious, whereas a free discussion of the fact would be bound to make the whole thing seem innocuous, as indeed it did. He showed me the book and its autograph, and I had no reason to doubt him. I even signed it myself. The only way in which he altered the truth was to say he was early in the line to make it seem that he had not been present at the time of the trouble with the dry pens. I had no reason to doubt that, of course. But once I began to focus on Strong, I remembered that the autograph had been "Best Wishes" in light ink and the signature in dark. I had attributed this to Giles' egomania, but now it seemed clear that it was at that point that pen 1 had dried out and that the exchange had taken place. I actually saw half the writing with pen 1 and the other half with pen 2, and that made Strong the murderer. It fit in with my feeling that the murder must have been the result of a man losing control, for on the occasions when I spoke with Strong privately, he seemed to me a man emotionally on edge. It's amazing, in fact, how the same facts change their character when seen from a new viewpoint. Strong must have remained near the room, or as near as he dared, after the murder, which was, after all, unpremeditated and undesired. He had to wonder when it would be discovered and how, and he would want to be there to establish accident from the start. He must have seen me go in. I heard footsteps in the corridor soon after entering, and I'll bet they were his. He was into the room almost at once after I reported the death. I attributed his being upset to the fact that he was such an admirer of Giles. True, but he was also the killer of Giles. He worked overtime to talk me into favoring accident. He strenuously opposed the possibility of murder or of drug involvement. Naturally, I supposed he was protecting the hotel, not himself. But, of course, he was protecting himself. Sarah said, But why did he keep on using the pens after he had made that fatal mistake? He was still carrying heroin when he was caught. I don't suppose he had a choice, Sarah. He couldn't let on that he had given the whole thing away or he was a dead man. He had to keep on as before, hoping he could cover up everything not only from me and from the police, but from his superiors as well. Where I made my worst mistake, unwittingly, was to seize the impulse of the moment just before the Asimov panel, when Strong and I were sitting together in the audience, to use him to check your story about the drug problem. I told him I knew about the system of drug transportation, and that I knew that hotel employees were involved. It was a shot in the dark, and from his strong denial of the whole thing, I thought, sorry, Sarah, that you were the liar. I attributed his obvious fear and perturbation once again to his concern for the hotel, and that little bit of blindness nearly killed me, and you, maybe. Sarah did not make any attempt to flatten me out for my lack of faith in her. She let it go and said, You mean, after that he arranged to have you followed and attacked? I don't know what he told his bosses, that I was a private investigator who was getting too close. In any case, he was convincing enough, or his superiors were sufficiently casual about occasional liquidations to have me marked for knifing. Sarah muttered, How horrible. What if they're still after you? If they are, what can I do but try to be careful? I don't feel good about it, but let's hope that they're mainly interested in prevention and not in revenge. They'll be too busy trying to save themselves now, I hope, to get after me again. Besides, killing me will do them no good now. Anyway, the story as I told it to you is beautiful, but as Eunice DeVore would say, a defense attorney would never let it get to a jury unshattered. In fact, on my logic alone, I doubt if Strong could be arrested, let alone tried and convicted. So I had to get Strong to break down in the presence of someone smart enough to see the significance and capable, besides, of taking the necessary action. That was Marsigliani, who, you assured me, was honest. She said, How did you know you could break him down? I didn't know. I could only hope. Strong was on edge to begin with, and coming upon me alive this morning, suddenly and without warning, must have rattled him to the point of despair. When I got him up to 1511, he didn't know what he was waiting for or what I could possibly intend to do. He knew the murderer wouldn't come in because he knew the murderer was already there. I watched the panic and tension mount in him, and I gambled that 10 minutes of it would be enough to break him if I struck suddenly. How clever, she said. How lucky, I said bitterly. Lucky enough to prove myself a murderer. My forgetting of the pens brought on Giles' death. I had been hoping to prove that the pens had nothing to do with it. Sarah said, They had something to do with it, but everything in the world had something to do with it. Why did the pen have to run out just as Strong was standing before him? If it hadn't, all would have still been well. Or if Strong hadn't been impelled to offer a pen of his own. Or giving in to the impulse if Strong had just handed him the right pen. Or if I had stayed with DeVore in his room. Or if DeVore hadn't fiddled with the pen he had and opened it. Or if Strong hadn't panicked. Look for responsibility, and everything is at fault, including random chance and the victim himself. The only reason you so desperately want to be the villain yourself is that I am a romantic, that only people who are villains or angels are of interest to me. Well, suppose I tell you that I discard all villains and angels. Suppose I tell you I'll settle for a woman I like. She flushed a little and said, Well, it's over. I hope it's over. Will you be going back to the convention now? No. I've had enough convention. The big banquet is tonight, but I won't attend. I have something much better in mind. What's on your schedule?
Nothing. The advertising campaign is taken care of, and my son won't be back for 10 days. I'll go to the office to attend to some little items, and then I'm having at least a week off.
Mind if I come back to your office with you?
Not at all.
Good. I'm going to take off some time also. I think I've earned it. Why not take time off together? She smiled.
Now and then?
Why not? How about a late dinner tonight?
I'd love it. We could make up for what didn't happen last night, if you like. I might like.